Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, from the world headquarters of Le Show, the Legacy Le Show Dome, in the home of the homeless. And before I do anything else, the Big Uneasy keeps on rolling in Dallas, I believe, and certainly at the beautiful Crest Theater in Sacramento. And I don't mean that metaphorically. It is a beautiful theater. And also at the in Athens, Georgia, which, as you may know, is the Athens of Georgia. It lost out as the Sparta of Georgia, but it just sneaked in as the Athens. And I say that at the top, lest I forget, because my brain is kind of mush today. Thanks to the good people at American Airlines. They know why we fly, because we have to. And they treat us accordingly. Maybe you, ladies and gentlemen, maybe you remember the good old days when airlines, if you asked them a question, just wouldn't give you an answer, wouldn't tell you anything. I look back on those as the good old, I look fondly back on those as the good old days, because now it's all different. On a flight, I've been sort of off the grid for the last week, and flying back onto the grid, straight into airline hell, heading for Miami yesterday on the fine fleet of American Airlines. We don't have pillows anymore, sir. Oh, and laptop power? Well, we've deactivated it because we're changing the thing. Okay. And then on exactly the same aircraft flying out of Miami, immediately thereafter, there's a pillow and there's laptop power. So they'll say anything now. It doesn't make any difference. They won't not say something. They just will say anything. It's a 180, you see. But don't let that make you think that the second flight was airline heaven, because they forgot a little something to fuel up. But you won't read about that. Anyway, it's a very special edition, therefore, of Hello, Welcome to the Show. You know, I'm feeling 10 million times better than I was just a minute ago. I know. It's hard to believe. You rarely hear the number 10 million in current parlance. Except for this. Radioactivity levels in one part of the stricken Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant are 10 million times higher than normal. See? What a nutty coincidence. That's according to Japanese officials, although late word from Al Jazeera English is that they now say that was a mistake. They just misread the figures. Because that's what you do in the middle of a nuclear thing. You misread, you see, ladies and gentlemen. That's reassuring. That's almost as reassuring as 10 million times higher. I don't know which is more reassuring, frankly. Tests on the surface of a pool of water that's formed in the number 2 reactor revealed radioactivity of 4 times the level deemed safe by the government. The worker, I would trust this, ladies and gentlemen, I would trust this indicator more than anything. That's according to The Guardian. The worker carrying out the test reportedly fled before taking a second reading. Well, that would explain why he got it wrong, because it looked bad, and he fled. He fled. These are the brave people who fled. The power plant at the center of the biggest civilian nuclear crisis in Japan contained far more spent fuel rods than it was designed to store, according to The Guardian, while its technicians repeatedly failed to carry out mandatory safety checks, according to documents from the reactor's operator. They should know. Tokyo Electric Power documents say the company repeatedly missed safety checks over a 10-year period. You know, just a blink of an eye in geological time. Lasting up to two weeks before the disaster in March, and allowed uranium fuel rods to pile up inside the 40-year-old facility when the plant was struck by the earthquake and tsunami. The reactor is designed by GE 50 years ago. That's before they weren't paying any federal taxes. See, they design better now because they don't have to. It's the taxes that made them design the plants all wrong, don't you see? The reactors contain the equivalent of almost 6 years of highly radioactive uranium fuel produced by the facility. The revelations will add to pressure on TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power, to explain why, under its cost-cutting chief executive, Mr. Shimizu, it opted to save money by storing the spent fuel on-site rather than invest in safer storage options. But it costs more. Critics of Japan's nuclear power program say the industry's patchy safety record and close ties to regulating authorities. That can't happen anywhere else. That's impossible. Will have to change if it is to regain public trust. 1 month before the tsunami, government regulators approved a TEPCO request to prolong the life of one of its six reactors by another decade, despite warnings that its backup power generator contained stress cracks. Do you ever have those from time to time? Stress cracks. Making them more vulnerable to water damage. Weeks later, TEPCO admitted it had failed to inspect 33 pieces of equipment inside the plant's cooling systems, including water pumps. Thank God they didn't need those. Regulators in Japan have been accused of uncritically backing industry moves to prolong the life of aging nuclear plants. A regulatory committee reviewing the reactor's stay of execution said maintenance management was, quote, inadequate, and the quality of inspection, quote, insufficient. Okay. That works for me. The plant at the time disaster struck contained almost 4,000 uranium fuel rods kept in pools of circulating water, the equivalent of more than three times the amount of radioactive material usually kept in the active cores of the plant's reactors. But wait, there's so much more. A suspected breach in the core at one reactor at Fukushima could mean more serious radioactive contamination, Japanese officials said Friday, a condition that the prime minister called, quote, very grave and serious. Dear Prime Minister, it's okay to say serious or severe. I wouldn't be using the word grave. I'm sure it's not a homonym in Japan, in Japanese, but grave. Ditch it, babe. A nuclear engineer who resigned from his job at Toshiba over safety concerns has attacked the Japanese government, its nuclear industry, and regulators over their safety record. Dr. Masahi Goto, Toshiba supplied two of the reactors at Fukushima. GE supplied the rest. We have the government commission overseeing nuclear safety standards. In my opinion, they're not doing their job, he told an Australian correspondent for Australia's ABC. Dr. Goto says the crisis shows Japan has not yet learned the lessons of history. At Three Mile Island, the nuclear fuel melted, he said. Fuel is melting here now. We have to design reactors to withstand melting fuel rods, he says. Right now, the reactor will break down due to the heat generated by the melting rods. He says, in Japan's nuclear industry, profits take precedence over safety standards. Again, thank goodness that can only happen in Japan. Otherwise, ladies and gentlemen, I'd be... He adds, no one says it officially or openly when setting standards for future earthquakes. The thought is of money. How much is it going to cost? This underlies the government's decision-making. They are thinking the costs could have a bad repercussion on the economy. He says Japan's nuclear safety standards have been based on an insufficient acknowledgement of the potential severity of natural disasters. The anticipated levels of worst-case scenario earthquake, he says, is not correct. Decisions have been made on the opinions of the more optimistic seismologists. Well, they're just more fun to be around, don't you think? I love the company of optimistic seismologists. It's just so up. And on the other hand, part of this nation's key radiation warning system was out of service. Out of service as the U.S. braced for possible exposure to the fallout from Japan, according to the Associated Press. While no dangerous levels of radiation have reached American shores, how would they know if the the test of the monitoring network has spurred some lawmakers to question whether it can adequately safeguard the country against future disasters. The system is crucial because federal officials use the monitor's readings to validate the impact of nuclear incidents, then alert the local governments and the public. In California, federal officials said four of the 11 stationary monitors were offline for repairs or maintenance last week. The EPA did not immediately say why the monitors were inoperable, but did not fix them until several days after low levels of radiation began drifting toward the mainland United States. A sleepy New Jersey town has popped onto the nation's radar screens because it has the oldest nuclear plant in the United States and some say the most dangerous. Named for a Revolutionary War general, Lacey is a town few from the outside seaside settlement know much about before the Japan situation. It, too, uses a GE Mark I boiling water reactor. Oh, imagination in action. Many residents of Lacey and surrounding Jersey Shore townships worry that a similar nuclear disaster... I bet my ratings just went up because I said Jersey Shore. That a similar nuclear disaster could happen at Oyster Creek, Lacey, and it wouldn't need an earthquake or tsunami to trigger it. You see, the plant has been dogged by problems, including a corroding liner in the carbon steel containment unit, leaks that allow radioactive tritium to seep into drinking water. That couldn't happen anywhere else. And huge volumes of stocked, spent fuel rods. We have 40 years of radiation on site, 2.5 to 3 times more than in Japan, said an anti-nuclear activist. Oyster Creek at Lacey is owned and operated by Exelon Corporation, which employs 700 people at the plant. Jobs! Jobs! That's the oldest. What about the newest? Well, India's most modern, newest nuclear plant in Kaiga is in sharp focus. The plant's directors claim that Kaiga is built on seismically stable land and is located relatively inland and out of reach of a tsunami. Two major incidents involving human error, however, indicate the plant has a record of personnel with questionable integrity. It's hit the headlines for all the wrong reasons since it was commissioned in 1994. An under construction dome collapsed, leading to an international outcry and debate about India's capabilities in constructing a safe nuclear installation. As a result of the dome collapse, Unit 1 went critical. Personnel at Kaiga have lost two of their colleagues. First one disappeared under mysterious circumstances in January 2009. 6 months later, another technician was found dead after he went missing for 3 days. And in last November, tritium. There's that darn tritium again. Contamination was detected in some workers during a routine test. The survey of the plant did not indicate heavy water leakage from any of the reactor systems. And the Indian Nuclear Power Corporation stonewalled details of its investigations into the tritium leak. Strangely, I find that reassuring. I like stonewalls. Oh, stonewalls. China is pressing ahead with nuclear energy cooperation with Pakistan, despite concerns it is shipping decades-old technology to our friend. China itself suspended approvals for new nuclear power plants to review safety standards. But Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman was asked about whether Beijing is similarly concerned about exporting outdated nuclear technology to Pakistan. She dismissed it as unrelated. Nuclear Regulatory Inspection Team is at Ameren Corporation's Callaway Nuclear Plant near Fulton, Missouri, after concerns were raised about lubrication of an auxiliary feedwater pump. Just coincidentally with what's going on. But these things, do you think all these things are just happening now, or we're just hearing about them because this is in the news, ladies and gentlemen? Or because I'm catching up with the grid? San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station in California has a plan to extend its operating license past 2022. The owner needs approval from the NRC. The reviews are continuing. And here's the buried lead way at the bottom of that story. A document published by the California Energy Commission in 2008 found that a fault 5 miles off the coast of San Onofre could potentially produce a larger earthquake than engineers estimated when San Onofre was being designed in the late 1960s and 70s. Who could have known that it little more. An official overseeing nuclear safety in China said the safety of that country's nuclear power facilities is guaranteed. That worries me. While reaffirming its goal of developing nuclear power as a clean energy source, there is a guarantee for the safety of China's nuclear power facilities, and China will not abandon nuclear power for fear of slight risks, says Tian Shujia. Made the remarks in an interview with People's Daily. Run by the people. Comes out daily. Hence the name. And speaking of tritium, our old friend tritium, the Vermont Department of Public Service Health and Environmental Conservation has asked, the three departments have asked for the test results from a former drinking water well at the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. Members say the results aren't coming in quickly enough. In a message to the vice president of Vermont Yankee, the heads of the departments say Entergy, the owner of the plant, has until March 28th, gee, that's tomorrow, to provide test results. We consider analysis of this well extremely valuable due to its close proximity to a known source of tritium-contaminated groundwater. Verbal and written requests to resume testing have been made since February of last year when the former drinking water well was taken out of service. Still, no testing. And, ladies and gentlemen, because about several listeners sent me this material this week, safe nuclear does exist, says Ambrose Evans Pritchard in the London Sunday Telegraph. It would be based on thorium, not uranium. China, there's that China again, has chosen a thorium-based molten salt reactor system. That's liquid fuel. The idea was pioneered by U.S. physicists at Oak Ridge and then later dropped. Chinese scientists claim hazardous waste from the thorium plant will be 1,000 times less than with uranium. I'm feeling 1,000 times better right now. The system is inherently less prone to disaster. If the system, the reactor begins to overheat, says a former NASA engineer and a thorium expert, a little plug melts and the salts drain into a pan. There is no need for computers or the sort of electrical pumps crippled by the tsunami in Japan. The reactor saves itself. They operate at normal atmospheric pressure, so you don't have the sort of hydrogen explosions we've seen in Japan. One of these reactors would have come through the tsunami just fine. There would have been no radiation release. Thorium has its own issues, but no thorium reactor could easily spin out of control. Thorium must be bombarded with neutrons to drive the fission process. There is no chain reaction. Residual heat left behind in a crisis would be orders of magnitude less than in a uranium reactor. Thorium is as common as lead. America has a lot. Norway has so much. Oslo is planning a post-oil era where thorium might drive the country's next phase of wealth. So I would like to hear, ladies and gentlemen, if anybody out there actually knows about this. I remember a few years ago there was a little wavelet of people sending me information about this. But now would be the time, I think, to hit me to, if anybody out there really knows about thorium. Because right now we're dealing with our friend the atom, and he's clean, cheap, and too safe to meter. Addy, you were good today.
Thank you. See ya.
He's gone. Now, ladies and gentlemen. And again, he just slips right through the walls. He doesn't need any doors. Tales of airport security. Dear Harry, a friend of mine directed me to your website after I told him of my experience with airport security, my trip from New York to San Francisco. I own a Toyota Prius. Being battery operated, there is no sound when it is turned on in park mode. I drove my Prius to the airport Thursday. parked in the economy lot and took the shuttle to the airport terminal, checked in, and smoothly made it through airport security. Now I had an hour to wait for my flight. I started to get nervous that I had only parked and actually did not turn off my car. My anxiety got the better of me. I proceeded to leave the airport and took the shuttle back out to the economy lot and checked my car. Yes, I had turned it off. Got back on the shuttle, back to the terminal, and back to the security. This time they said, "We have to check your bag, ma'am," and they pulled out a large steak knife. Shocked and mortified, I let them throw it away. How it got in there, I have no clue, but don't leave your suitcase open in the kitchen when you have careless teenage boys. Not really knowing what to say, I said nothing, but I could not believe just an hour earlier I made it through security with this large knife. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Australia has issued an apology to the Afghan government after it emerged soldiers had posted racist comments on the internet, calling Afghans sand N-words and dune coons. Stephen Smith, the Australian Defense Minister, apologized to Abdul Rahim Wardak, his Afghan counterpart, on behalf of 1,500 Australian troops based in Afghanistan's restive Uruzgan province. George Lopez has apologized for referring to Kirstie Alley as a pig. "I misjudged the joke," he tweeted Thursday. "No malice was intended, and I apologize to Kirstie." The Caribbean island of St. Lucia apologized to three American gay men who were violently attacked and robbed inside a vacation villa by assailants who called them the F-word. The apology from the tourism minister came after one of the victims posted a graphic account of the nightmarish incident on his Facebook page. In a meeting at his Richmond office, Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli personally apologized to Thomas Hainsworth, telling the man who was released from prison after serving 27 years for a string of rapes and assaults that prosecutors believe now that he did not commit, that Virginia's justice system had failed him. "It almost brings me to tears to think of the 27 years, Cuccinelli said, as I said to him, "I'm sorry doesn't do it," on behalf of the people of Virginia. "But there isn't much more. I can't get those years back." Burkina Faso, you know where it is? Africa. Their army apologized for damage done to shops in Ouagadougou, the capital. I like saying Ouagadougou, the capital, following a protest by soldiers earlier this week where at least 10 people were injured. Ouagadougou, everybody. Former Cuban leader Fidel Castro apologized this week for the brouhaha. It's almost as much fun as Ouagadougou. He sparked when he noted that he had given up his responsibilities as first secretary of the ruling Communist Party after emergency surgery. He said he was so focused on commenting on President Obama in the column published Tuesday, he did not realize the importance that his comments on the party post would be given. Several analysts regarded the comments as revealing for the first time that Castro had surrendered control of the party when he underwent emergency surgery. A Dutch soccer player apologized for chanting anti-Semitic slogans caught on camera following a victory over a team with traditional Jewish support. Pentagon prosecutors touched off a protest and issued an apology this week for likening the Seminole Indians in Spanish Florida to Al-Qaeda in documents defending Guantanamo's military commissions. The American Israel Public Affairs Committee sent its supporters a letter saying, "Today you received an email from us about dangers facing Israel right now and ways in which you can help ensure American support for Israel at a difficult and dangerous time. We included information about the horrific bombing in Jerusalem. In hindsight, it was wrong of us to mention this terrible tragedy the same day it occurred in the context of this email. We are deeply sorry." Dateline Seattle, a Roman Catholic religious order in the Northwest, has agreed to pay $166 million to more than 500 victims of sexual abuse, many of whom were American Indians and Alaska Natives who were abused decades ago at Indian boarding schools. One of the largest abuse settlements of any kind by the Catholic Church. It came with an apology, of course. Dateline New York, a synagogue has apologized to its congregants for showing a video about the murdered members of the Fogel family in the West Bank settlement of Itamar. The video included photos of the body of a three-year-old boy killed during the attack. In email to the membership, Rabbi Avi Weiss wrote, "We deeply regret the terrible mistake we made in the video which we showed." Back to the nuclear world, Tokyo Electric Power executive apologized this week to civilians who have been evacuated from Okuma, Fukushima Prefecture, since the earthquake and tsunami. TEPCO Executive Vice President Norio Tsuzumi made the apology. Executive Vice President said, "We are sorry to have caused you too much trouble. Next time we'll cause you just enough." A day after she was asked to resign from the Broward, Florida County School Board for making racial slurs, Ann Murray issued a written apology. It was the N-word. And Dateline Abbeville, Alabama, nearly 70 years after a black woman was raped by a gang of white men, leaders of the rural southeast Alabama community where it happened apologized this week, acknowledging that her attackers escaped prosecution because of racism and an investigation bungled by police. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is the show. We have kind of a special consumer feature right now. 10 wonderful... And we have a call on our newsmaker line right now. All right, let's take this call because it's on the newsmaker line. Hello, you're on the air.
Harry Shearer.
Yes, guilty as charged.
Do you recognize this voice?
Let's see.
Yvonne De La Femina, Harry, how are you?
I was going to guess the guy from my insurance agency who was not allowing my claim for the kitchen flooding, but Yvonne!
Oh, Do you have good insurance, by the way?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good.
I don't have a good insurance person, but I have good insurance. That was the whole. Yvonne De La Femina, you have been a not frequent but occasional caller to this broadcast, and you, if I'm not mistaken, the first time we heard from you, you were the last female hostage left in Iraq.
That's right, Harry. I was over there doing an evening of Shirley Bassey music.
Ah, that's
the Hilton over there.
Yeah.
And you were so, I tell you, the interview you did with me really was instrumental in my getting out of there, and I.
I think it was probably vocal more than instrumental, don't you think? Yvonne, in the intervening years, you've called us on occasion. First of all, you had had a sex change. You've gone through a couple more. What
the headlines really are, Harry? I was born a man. I had a sex change to become a woman. Wasn't completely satisfied as a woman. Had another successful operation. Became a fella again, and then personal, brouhahas, whatever. I became a woman again.
All right. So
that's where it is right now.
I was just going to say, please don't take this the wrong way, but what are you right now?
I'm a lady. Very, very happy, strong lady.
Are you a big boned lady?
Well, I'm a big, handsome woman.
Okay.
I've been described, and it's a wonderful time to be a woman, Harry. I really think we may have our first lady president. And it's a very exciting time to be a woman. Not always for me personally, but.
And are you still performing, Yvonne? And you were a musical.
Well, no, I'm not really performing, Harry. You know, I was a performer and I was an actress, or an actor now, you can say, even if you are a lady, you can say actor.
Yeah.
And
that's what a wonderful time it is that we live in.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if you know this, Harry, but I was a little sidecar issue. I was the first person, the first artist at the Jack King Summer Theater to play both Professor Harold Hill and Marion the Librarian in The Music Man during the same run.
Wow.
And the only reason my string of performances ended a little abruptly was the stitches started to pull during the Wells Fargo number, and I had a bow out of the show. So, yes, long story short, and maybe it'll pertain to our later conversation about why I'm calling, but I was a performer, and I haven't done it for quite some time now. I sort of took a little bit of a hiatus and had kind of a bad relationship that I think made me stronger. I won't say nervous breakdown. A Russian fellow that I was very, thought we were really the wind beneath my wings for quite a while, and that didn't work out. And
what, your wings didn't need wind?
Well, just didn't turn out to be the one, you know?
Yeah.
And I suffered kind of a, you know, went through a little sad patch, but then, and even thought I'd go back to being a man again for a while. That's how dark it got for
Wow.
me. And if my rainy day money hadn't been spent setting up my home office for my new career, I might have just gone ahead and done it. And I'm glad that I didn't. I think I spent the money very wisely and for the new business, you know, that I'm in now. And I don't want to make this a plug.
No, I'm I don't normally do that. We're
no, public, no, no, not at all.
Public radio here. But I have to ask you, Yvonne, because it's been a while since we talked. When you go to a doctor and say, I was a man, I'm now a woman, I want to become a man again. Does the doctor say that's going to be rough? Okay, let's.
He just physically, the operation itself.
Yeah, I mean, does he say, does he try to discourage?
Talk me out of it.
Yeah, does they try to talk you out of it, or does he just roll up his sleeves and say, let's go?
Well, I think when they see the determination in my eyes and how absolutely positive I am each time that this is the right thing for me, you can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that kind of belief and absolute confidence that you're just a man trapped in a woman's body, then a woman trapped in a man's body, and then a man trapped in a woman's body again. And if the doctor is compassionate, if he's read his oath, he's going to do the next series of operations. And fortunately, I've found wonderful, wonderful, compassionate medical help, but mostly not in this country.
I was going to say, onshore or offshore, but, yeah.
On land, but yeah. But not in the continental United States.
Not in the 48.
Not yet.
Yeah.
But there's time. I think we're going to get there.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned your new direction in life. We might as well delve into that a little bit before we find out why you're calling. What is it that you're doing now, Yvonne?
I'm a life coach, Harry.
A life coach.
I'm telling you something. I've never felt so jazzed every day.
Are you using air quotes around that or not?
I am.
I sense
actually,
those. Yeah.
I'm just thrilled about it, and I think I'm doing some good in this darn world, and I'm pretty excited. And you know, one of the great things about being a life coach, apart from the helping of the people, is that you can pretty much do it over the phone, which is great. I mean, I recently did two sessions while I was having an estrogen colonic, actually.
Wow.
My astrologist gives those.
Yvonne, let me ask you a question that I think is in the minds of most
sure.
listeners. How did you prepare yourself? How does one prepare to be a life coach?
The largest part of preparation, Harry, is just believing you have something to offer. Because really, you really don't need a license or anything.
No, I know.
And there's just some questions on the internet that I won't even say certificate. And the rest of it is sheer belief that your life experiences and the way you've led your life. You got to feel really good about how you led your life, really, Harry. And you've got to be able to communicate that to people who are really, really looking to you. It's not being a therapist, really, Harry. It's really practical help in making you a better you. And I don't mean you a better you. You're already a great you.
Thank you. I work a little bit on me every day.
Work does not show. It's seamless.
Thank you. When people come to you, Yvonne, and this is a delicate question again, but... do you tell them about your history as a man / woman? And I pardon my language, but a man.
No. Don't apologize.
Okay.
I hear this all the time. No, it's really not so much about me. You know, it's all about them. I try to keep it the focus on them. You know.
So, do you tell them anything about yourself?
No, I really don't want to overstep. I mean, I think that might be over the line a little bit. I tell them things about me in terms of. Follow my dream. You know, I did these things, and I don't think the specific. I don't really know how necessarily that would relate so much. You know, maybe I should.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, when you give some advice, and maybe a client, you call them clients.
Clients, right?
Yeah. Says, well, how do you know? And would you tell an anecdote from your own experience?
Well, sometimes I'll just be cute and just say, "You're calling me, aren't you?" No.
Yeah, that always works.
And. And maybe a little bit, I'll try to turn it on them a little bit and say, well, these are the kind of questions you've been asking people in your life that have gotten you in trouble.
Ah.
You know what I mean? I don't think it's so important that they know my psychosexual history.
But what about your theater history?
Well, that I do talk about. Because I think I've learned so much from playing in the theater or in a concert venue about how to project on stage, the person you want to be and do. You know?
Yeah.
Because it's all about doing.
Yeah. And being.
And being.
Yeah. See, well, maybe I should be a life coach if I could.
You are, in a way.
Well,
I listen to you every week.
Thank you. Now, so do you never take clients face-to-face? Pardon me again?
No, I don't. I never do. And you know what? That is a very good thing. Because I think people are more relaxed and more open if you don't, you know, see them.
Yeah. Now, you don't, again, pardon me, Yvonne, but I think that you've been so open with us over the years that I feel free to ask you these questions, but your preference for doing this over the phone has nothing to do with any, shall we say, anomalies in your personal appearance at this point?
No. Oh, my gosh, no, Harry. No, I think I'm looking great. Better than ever, and it's more really about where I'm living is really not set up for that. And also, you really, I think that life, it's there are people are all over the country. Really, none of them are in my area.
Ah.
All on the phone.
Oh, okay. Are you blonde or brunette now, or redhead? What's your look?
Strawberry blonde.
Strawberry blonde. That's so
right. Very short. Very kind of, did you see... $1 Million Baby, the boxer in that.
No.
Yeah. I want to say Renelle Zegwiger,
Well, say it.
But I always want to say it right.
Yeah.
I can't really say it right.
Yeah. No? Well, one of these days. So, Yvonne, you're calling for a specific reason, I guess.
Apart from just touching base with you again and just hearing, and it's so great.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just calling about, I know you probably are up on this area. You really are so in, know what's going on in the world. But all my children are having a transsexual character.
Really?
They're introducing a transsexual character. Zarf, Z-A-R-F.
This is the television soap opera, All My Children.
All My Children,
uh-huh.
MC.
Uh-huh.
That's how they refer.
I see.
You're a fan. Uh-huh. And they're having a transsexual character, introducing it for sweeps, which is interesting.
Huh.
And I just got to say, Harry, that I think it's kind of based on me. And you know what, Harry, I can't even get a reading.
So
for the part.
You're saying... Now, is this is a man who becomes a woman on the show?
Yes, man who becomes a woman.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they're keeping it really under, you know...
Under wraps?
Under wraps.
Yeah.
I know that feeling, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not just making this up. I have a couple of facts that can back me up. I was getting a pedicure not long ago, and my feet are in tubs of warm water next to a lovely... A woman, when you start to talk, as you're sitting there waiting for your corns to soften or whatever. And I was sitting next, struck up a conversation with a young lady, wonderful young woman, Renee Markowitz Santiago.
Okay.
One seemingly lovely Jewish woman, married a Cuban fella, by the way. You know, we're talking, exchanging stories, we're sitting there.
Yeah.
And I ended up talking about my life story. I even showed her, Renee, pictures from my last sex change that I have on my cell phone.
Really?
Yes. And when she regained consciousness, Harry, she hadn't eaten lunch.
Mm.
I guess it was a little startling to see the pictures. She said to me, and again, remember the name, Renee Markowitz Santiago. She said to me that my story was the most mesmerizing story she ever heard. Long story short, I'm watching AMC, All My Children, and I see that Renee Markowitz Santiago is a writer on that show.
Oh, my God.
And I hear that they're doing this Zarf character. And... And it's also no coincidence that the name is Zarf, and I can explain that to you.
Yeah, please do, because that's not a normal-sounding name.
Oh, it's not a normal. Thank you.
For either man or woman.
Thank you.
All right.
And, Harry, what are those things? And I don't really have the big, fancy East Coast education, but is it an anagram when the letters of a name mean other things?
You mean stand for something else?
Yes, Z-A-R-F.
No, that's not an anagram.
Okay. Well, that's... Neither here nor there, really.
Okay.
Because if you go Zarf, and I told her all of this.
Yeah.
The name of the fellow who performed my last procedure is named Zoltan Asimov.
Yeah.
Z-A, right?
Yeah.
So, and the R-F is registered pharmacist. He had been a surgeon in Sierra Leone.
Uh-huh.
Only become a pharmacist here.
Yeah.
Z-A-R-F.
But, Yvonne?
Yes.
Pharmacist is with a P.
Yes, I know that.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, if they had done it exactly, the anagram, which is not an anagram.
Right.
Then that would have left them probably no wiggle room legally at all.
I see what you're saying. So they did that amount of...
Okay, but I get the inside joke.
Okay.
I get it.
The name of the doctor again?
Zoltan Asimov.
Zoltan Asimov.
Zoltan Asimov.
And he was
He's not really... He would be a doctor in his own native...
I understand.
Leone.
It's an odd name for Sierra Leone, but I'm following...
I know that he was born there.
Okay, all right.
More about the medical stuff.
I see.
Pretty closed mouth guy.
Yeah.
Always seemed in a hurry.
Huh. Always?
Well, not when it counted.
Okay, good. So, Yvonne, you're not calling because you're going to sue or something, are you?
No, I'm not going to sue Harry any more than those young Afro-American, or is it African-American or black fellows that were so profoundly upset by Michael Richards that they may need a financial settlement.
Yeah.
I don't know. If not a reading, I certainly would like an explanation. And if that translated into a... It was explained financially to me. Whatever.
Yeah. But when you say a reading, then so your first goal... would be to be playing the character on the show? Is that what
I would love it. I mean, God knows I have the chops.
Excuse me?
I certainly have. Well, I've had many chops, but no. But I mean, you know what I mean. I certainly.
You mean the acting?
I am a performer. I and I love the life coach thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I also love to craft a character.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't?
And the singing, of course, could be fun.
Is there singing on All My Children?
No, but there could be if I played that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And so have you've called the office and asked for an appointment or something like that?
Oh, yes, and I tried. And somehow Renee seems to be always out when I call.
Hmm.
She's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were there together, oh, God, half an hour,
uh-huh.
40 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're there so long, and your feet are out, and you talk, you know?
Yeah, there's a bond.
You never dreamed you're going to be your life, because I may want to use that, my own character, in some written piece of some kind.
Some theater piece?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. But if you called, like, the casting office, or just tried to call Renee?
Tried to call Renee, call the casting office, the executive producers, ABC, you know.
Disney?
Disney, what's it pertaining to, very, very friendly, but distant.
Yeah.
Everybody's, I don't know, I'm sure you run into this all the time.
Hmm.
People are, you know, they get what they want and they move on.
Yeah.
Caravan moves on.
Caravan moves on. Yvonne, did any of them say, but the character is a man becoming a woman and you're right now a woman?
No, and that's a very good point. And I'm not saying it would be an easy rewrite. But, boy, they do so many shows. It shouldn't be that, you know. And I'm not also saying that I wouldn't be willing to, you know.
Oh, my God, really?
Well, no, but I'm certainly willing to talk.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah, I see.
So
you're open, pardon the expression again.
I am, and I think it might be more interesting starting as a woman anyway, but that, you know, I'm not going to tell them how to produce their show. I just think it might be certainly an open exchange of ideas.
So are you calling basically to ask me to, or just to use these microphones of the...
Well, it's to use your microphones to just say hello. You can't take a person's life and make daytime drama out of it without so much as a howdy do, hello, let's talk, let's pay, whatever.
Yeah. As you understand it, is this a character who has more than one sex change, or is that nobody knows because it's they're keeping the story?
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I've told it how I've gone back and forth a couple of times.
Right.
And each time thought it was the right way to go, and was for months.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they're heading. Maybe they're going to be doing that as well.
Hmm.
It'd be nice to know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if not, at least I feel like I've gotten my voice out there just a bit.
Yeah, but possibly what you'd like is your pound of flesh. Pardon the expression again. I'm sorry. But.
Well, I just like a good hearing.
Mm.
That's all.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people in the industry listen to this broadcast. Weirder things have happened than that you get a call from the people at All My Children.
Well, you know, this similar story happened to a young Afro-American fellow who thinks that John Guare took his life and... 6 degrees of separation, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know where that went, so I'm not sure what my point is. But look it up.
Okay. All right. Good. We have the internet at our disposal now, so we can do that. Yvonne, great to hear from you. Good luck with the life coaching. You have
Thank you, Harry, very, very much. And it's wonderful to speak to you again.
And great to speak to you. And
good luck with all your projects.
Thank you. And I hope that somebody from All My Children calls you.
Well, if they do, I'll certainly... owe it to you.
And I hope this can be resolved in a friendlier way and that nobody needs to call Gloria Allred.
That's right.
Yeah.
She, you don't have her number, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Yvonne Della Femina, always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
I suspect my sanity has a hold on me since I
This is Le Show, and among the things catching up with, and you may need to be caught up on this too, is why did the blowout preventer fail at the BP oil spill almost a year ago? Well, we now know, this as of this week, a piece of drill pipe wedged inside the blowout preventer at the doomed Macondo well kept the emergency equipment from averting the disastrous oil spill. According to a new investigation, in its first comprehensive analysis of why the supposedly fail-safe equipment didn't work as planned. We haven't heard anything like that recently, have we? Investigators concluded that powerful cutting components known as blind shear rams were unable to completely slash through slightly off-center drill pipe to seal the well hole and trap oil and gas underground. The chief problem was that as soon as oil and gas surged out of the deep-sea well, the drill pipe buckled and shifted to one side outside the space where those rams were able to slash to seal the well. This is from the forensic analysis firm Det Norsk Veritas. They determined the physical failure would have occurred regardless of how the blowout preventer was activated, whether by an automatic switch or using signals sent from workers on the Deepwater Horizon rig. The testing began at a NASA facility in New Orleans in mid-November at the direction of the Coast Guard. Invented nearly 90 years ago, blowout preventers are giant stacks of valves installed on top of land and seawells to help maintain control during unexpected pressure changes. The last line of defense against runaway wells, the BOPs have been compared to airbags and seatbelts. That's reassuring. The report cast fresh doubt on the effectiveness of the preventers and immediately renewed calls for a redesign of the devices, including proposals for redundant pipe-cutting rams and more powerful pistons to drive them. That's all I want, really, in life, ladies and gentlemen, more powerful pistons. And advocates, news of the godly, advocates for victims of clergy abuse called this week for an investigation into allegations that the Catholic Church purposely funneled problem priests into the chaplain corps of the U.S. military. It's all good. News of the Godly, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Oh, and keeping on top of that whole missile defense thing, U.S. defense officials have halted deliveries of a Raytheon warhead because it failed to intercept a mock enemy missile during a December test. That'll teach them. Hope the enemies weren't looking. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network and the Chaplain Corps therein. on the Mighty 104 in Berlin, up and down the East Coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ Planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave. Around the world by the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like fail-safe stuff, actually not failing, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. And yes, American Airlines, we do know that you know why we fly. The email address for this broadcast, playlist of the music heard here on, always available at harryshearer.com. You can find out where the Big Uneasy will be playing around the country in the upcoming months, all this spring, at TheBigUneasy.com. And this program is on Twitter in the person of me. I'm The Harry Shearer at Twitter. Or it's at The Harry Shearer on Twitter. Won't you? The show, now without pillows, comes to you from Century Progress of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.